Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, son. Son Luke.
I'm Captain Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager. Captain Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Do it.
Captain Captain Janeway.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
Could I be any more Ben Harrison?
A lot about today's episode making me question things I thought I knew or knew to expect in a Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
I'm so rattled by the experience of watching Threshold, Ben. I feel like I've got to clutch something to make me feel safe.
Oh, can I thump something on you and you can use that as an audition for whether or not you want to clutch it?
I think it's the only thing I can do at a crisis point like this, Ben.
Well, I have great news for you, Adam. We have a copy of the Star Trek Voyager first season show Bible.
Look at that. Is that the red letter edition?
No, it's not the King James show Bible. Uh-huh. Let's go to church, my friend.
It's good to see you all in church.
It's called the Bible.
That's the way God wants it. I don't know why, dude.
All these questions? Is a little blind faith too much to ask?
You know, I was just at Star Trek Las Vegas, Ben, and I checked the nightstand. There was no Star Trek show Bible in the nightstand.
They could be doing this. They could have been doing this the whole time.
It drives me crazy.
How much does it cost to photocopy a stack of papers, staple them together?
It's like a $200 Kinko's gift card amount of investment into a myriad amount of laughs.
Yeah, yeah. So many laughs they could have gotten and they didn't. Adam, this is the chapter on Tom Paris, the second character discussed in the show Bible. He's ahead of Chakotay in this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read you chapter and verse.
Okay.
Paris's career in Starfleet was expected to be exemplary. He descended from a proud lineage of Starfleet legends. A lineage of legends, Adam.
I like that. I like that alliteration.
His great-grandfather, grandmother, father, and aunt were all admirals. Everyone assumed that Tom, who was bright, capable, and charming, would achieve those same heights. No one knew that Tom felt a tremendous pressure to live up to the name his family had carved and had grave doubts whether that was possible.
No one suspected Tom Paris would be a fail son.
He fared well enough in Starfleet Academy. His grades, while not dazzling, were decent. His greatest skill was as a pilot, and he often said he'd rather pilot a ship than sit in the captain's chair. After graduation, he joined a unit of Starfleet's SAV division, a small attack vessel, where his piloting skills would be put to good use. But there was an accident during a War Games demonstration. A pilot was killed, and Tom Paris, fearing his reputation might suffer and derail his career, lied and placed the blame on a dead man. The fault was actually his, and had he simply owned up to that, he would have been disciplined. But he was young, dumb, full of cum, and terrified of bringing disgrace onto his illustrious family.
Is this the official show Bible you're reading from? What is this rag? Oh,
come emphasis mine.
Did you find this show Bible in a hole with some plates in it?
Yeah, there was a log in the woods that...
wow.
This mistake cost him dearly. When the lie was revealed, he was discharged. His worst fears had been realized. He had sullied the family name. He sank into a severe depression, wandering the next few years aimlessly, piloting freighters and tankers just to be behind the controls of a ship again. The only place he even felt vaguely alive. At one point, he landed in a port where he fell into a game of Dabo with some members of the Maquis.
Maquis?
At the end of a long night, he ended up joining them. Oh, that old chestnut. You're tying one on in some seedy port of call, and you wind up joining a dissident movement.
He woke up the next morning after having been stood up in a Maquis locker.
He was, like, right next to Kes, and he's like, oh, what are you doing in here? They offered him the one thing he wanted the most, to pilot a sleek starship in situations which would require extraordinary prowess. He wasn't much interested in their cause, but it did provide a fight, which took his mind off the fight with his own soul. He was with them barely a month when he was captured, and in his mind, that was another, quote, failure. When Captain Janeway contacts him in prison, it is the gift of a new chance at life, and he has always credited her for that opportunity. He would stop a phaser blast for her and is determined to make her glad she gave him a chance. He, of all the crew, is not dismayed by the cruel fate which has befallen them. What does it matter if they're at the ends of the galaxy? He's flying a ship and having adventures. That's just what he wants to be doing, and it doesn't matter particularly to him where it happens. He has an affection for B'Elanna, seeing in her a soul at war and reminding him of himself. And like B'Elanna, he is drawn toward the rock-like steadiness of Tuvok.
Yeah, there is something very turgid about Tuvok. And his constitution.
Yeah,
I mean, if only there was a way. I mean, I'm a perv, Ben, so, like, my mind naturally goes to the one way I feel like Paris could repay Captain Janeway for kindness. And boy, do we see it in this episode, Ben.
We sure do.
Is that the end of the reading?
That's so endeth the reading, Adam.
Wow. Well, a piece of the dilithium with you.
And also with you. Always feels good to get through the liturgy. But do you want to get into the episode we came to talk about today?
I don't know if I'll ever be allowed to take Star Trek communion after watching... Star Trek Voyager Season 2, Episode 15, Threshold.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning you around.
We start in media warp, Adam. The shuttle is really rocking.
I don't know. I don't like seeing shuttles in danger anymore. Too much of that lately.
Yeah. And they're pushing it past the transwarp limit. They talk about the transwarp drive being online. He's on the radio with BLT and Kim. Did you buy that this was a real shuttle in real danger?
I felt caught up in it. It was fun.
It was fun. I felt simulation vibes on this immediately, and I was wondering how it was that it felt like a simulation to me.
It's easy to say now, after the fact, after you have it all figured out. I think maybe the part that allowed me to keep the magic going is because it did not seem dangerous for so long. It felt exciting and fun.
Yeah. They have a crack in one of the pylons. They got to shunt all this power into the structural integrity field. And it just doesn't work. He flies her apart then.
We cut to the wide shot, and instead of a streakily exploding shuttle, it's a wide shot of the interior of the holodeck.
Yeah.
And Paris is on the ground in the fetal position.
You're dead.
I always want to see the exact transition of holodeck program to holodeck end program. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, especially if somebody is, like, sitting down. You want to see them, like, collapse onto the floor.
Yes, I would like to see that.
I think that'd be really fun.
So it's that moment to theme, and after the break, It's post-gaming in the mess hall. It's Kim, BLT, and Paris talking about what happened.
BLT says, "We require more pylons." And that's the problem they've got to work out. The nacelles that are doing the warping are breaking off of the shuttle every time they run this sim.
And ordinarily, I like a server that I can, you know, have a bit of rapport with, who can maybe, like, be a part of the conversation from time to time.
Right.
Fucking Neelix here is, like, just elbowing his way into this situation in a way that you know he does all the time.
Yeah.
With every conversation, anytime he freshens up someone's coffee, he's going in with some unsolicited advice or some questions that just derail the conversation that he's interrupting.
Great.
It's like, I like a personable server, and I like having an enjoyable interaction with the server, but I don't want the server to sit down at the table.
The few times that that's happened, the sit-down server, I don't know what to make of that.
I don't know what to do.
I admire the boldness of it, but mostly it's awkward for everyone.
I used to go to a restaurant occasionally in Brooklyn where there would be like a brown butcher paper on the table, and the server would sit down at the table and write the menu down on the
the
paper.
Yeah. That is so Brooklyn.
Didn't really care for it.
But Neelix is doing that thing where he doesn't quite understand what's being talked about and starts asking questions, and then does that thing that feels a lot like a parent wanting to help you with an internet outage. Like, you don't know how this works, so the help you're offering is actually anti-help. It's actually a drag on the problem we're trying to solve. But Neelix doesn't have that kind of self-awareness.
Like, I'm going to have to explain so many fundamental concepts to you.
Yeah.
All I need to do is unplug and replug. Like,
but this is a script technology. You introduce a dumb into a scene with some smarts, so that the smarts have an opportunity to explain the problem of the cold open to you in the scene after the cold open, so that we understand what happened.
Yeah, Neelix is really the Luke Skywalker of this episode. He's he's just a bright-eyed naif who comes into every situation and needs it to be explained to him a little bit.
With the blast shield down, I can't even see. How am I supposed to fight?
It's been a long time since we've seen a scene between him and Kes. Are they not an item anymore?
Kes wasn't in the last episode. Is she in this one?
Wait a minute, where'd she go? Bring her back.
Yeah, I mean, she's the doctor's assistant.
Oh yeah, I guess she is.
And then there's when she kisses Paris, Neelix gets so fucking pissed when she kisses his dead body.
Uh-huh, yeah. He's like, I knew it! I knew it!
So what we learn in this scene is that they're using a new kind of dilithium to run this warp speed experiment. And when they trexplain what's happening to Neelix, he takes it as an opportunity to describe a similar problem, to achieve a sort of common cause with the group.
Right. I've fucked up ships too.
But quite accidentally stumbles into a comparison that serves as an inspiration to Kim and Paris. They've, in this moment, are able to hypothesize a new solution to this problem.
And this would be a great problem to solve, because if you can break the warp 10 barrier, you can go anywhere in the universe instantly, and that would really help them get home.
Wow. And you're working on this?
In real basic terms, they have been driving so fast that the tires are pulling away from the Previa. But how they need to look at this is that it's the Previa pulling off of the tires.
Am I making any sense here?
They've been thinking about it upside down and backwards, and Neelix, like, from the mouth of babes, Neelix kind of presents them with the conceptual framework that they need to solve the problem.
Right.
And they're really excited. They slap him on the back, and then they go back to the simulator. And Tom Paris gets to experience simulated Warp 10. And we see this from, like, the end of the keynote presentation in the McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Like, the camera slowly pulls out from us watching a bit of the episode that we wouldn't have gotten to see otherwise.
I love transitions like this. They're not super flashy. They're that subtle flash that I really appreciate.
Yeah. That's nice.
So we can try a manned test flight?
I love this moment. Like, depending on the year you're listening to this show, and I know that's crazy to think about, like, we're in a year that is doing a lot of space experimentation. you got your billionaires doing billionaire things, but you'd also have like some real science happening with respect to sending capsules up to the space station and a bunch of companies like bidding their services for that.
And we got our first helicopter on Mars.
Yeah, and what's so interesting about the context of that when thought about in relation to this moment is that the Voyager crew has gone straight from holodeck trials to manned trials. It feels like they skipped out on the unmanned trial part.
They get like a Russian street dog and put...
or the part where they could put a holo emitter inside the shuttle with maybe the dock inside or maybe some sort of programming that makes the shuttle do it. No, they're going straight to a person.
The person's going to be Tom Paris. He's going to join the elite ranks of Orville Wright, Neil Armstrong, and Zefram Cochran.
Yeah.
Big names.
Some of the biggest names in the industry.
Yeah. Just a bunch of white guys.
Having been given this awesome responsibility, Paris gets some robe time before the mission ahead. You got to do that.
Yeah. Just lounge around, get your mind right. I love that he has like a piece of patio furniture in the middle of his quarters.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Paris in repose.
Yeah.
And Captain Janeway interrupts this moment to say that she has some bad news. Doc Holliday has recommended that Kim make the test flight for medical reasons. And Paris is like, Kim always gets to go where no one's gone before. It's not fair. It was weird. Like Kim really rode for the Delaney sisters going on the mission. I didn't quite get it, but he talked about morale being a huge, huge part of mission success.
Yeah. I mean, there was an earlier version of this script where the whole thing was just about whether you could get with both Delaney sisters. And and that the speech from the captain was like, Mr. Kim, if you make this happen, you will join the elite ranks of Neil Armstrong, Orville Wright. By getting with both Delaney sisters, you will make history. Paris has been grounded, Adam.
There's coffee in that slight enzymatic imbalance in your cerebellum.
There's like a 2% chance of brain damage, and Paris is like, you don't know what I did in prison.
That's nothing to me.
I drank Pruno for 10 years.
What do you think the percent chance of brain damage from that is?
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about percentages, Ben, there's a 2% chance of brain damage here, but a 100% loss of historical credit.
Yeah.
So he's got to do this to throw this in his dad's face and all those kids at school who didn't believe in him. I mean, there are reasons why this is worth the risk for him.
I mean, we read the Tom Paris Bible entry just earlier in this episode, and this like really speaks to that in a way that feels like maybe it's been hinted at before, but this really speaks directly to the pressure he felt was on him as a kid and as a cadet.
I really like B. Dunk's performance here. I think he takes it in a direction that is consistent with his character. I wonder if there were other takes here where he went in the direction of like being sad and crushed versus being aggressive and crushed and defensive, you know?
Yeah.
Like when we see him interact with his fake dad in that one scene where everyone's going insane, that was a version of Paris that I half expected here.
Right.
Especially when he evoked his family as reasons to do it.
I know what my dad will say. He'll say, wow, you could only get to warp 9.9. That adds up.
So it's shuttle launch time. Paris was given permission from Janeway. He's the guy. And so he pilots the shuttle Cochran.
Yeah.
Named not for a great man, but just a man. And letting history be the judge. What sucks about flying the shuttle Cochran is that you can't turn off the Ooby Dooby song.
Cochran to Voyager. All systems are nominal. Increasing speed.
We'll keep up with you as long as we can.
It just plays on a loop over and over again.
Yeah.
No one likes to fly the shuttle Cochran for that reason.
No. They say that they are depressurizing the shuttle bay, and that surprised me because, you know, on the Enterprise D, the shuttle bay has a force field, and you just fly the shuttle through it.
What's up with that low-rent shuttle bay on the Voyager?
It's like going from a luxury car to an economy car, going down to this crappy Voyager.
BLT is monitoring the status of the shuttle from engineering.
She's shoulder to shoulder with Traitor Guy.
Yeah, I don't like it, but it's sort of a great sort of Damocles here that just doesn't fall the way you would expect.
No, and like if you missed last week's episode and just see this guy in this scene, you wouldn't even notice it. It's something that is there to like be an extra story element for the people that are paying close attention. I really like that.
So Paris looks into the camera and goes, "I'm Tom Paris, and this is Breaking Warp 10. And then like puts on a Stars and Stripes cape and like a weird oversized helmet.
Mm-hmm. This is a slightly different model of shuttle than the bunk beds that we had on the Enterprise D. Should we call this the race car bed shuttle?
It's very sleek.
Very sleek. And it works. It's sleek enough to get him to Warp 10.
Yeah, but as soon as he does, his voice gets warped too.
Yeah.
I love this moment when we're like momentarily celebrating on the bridge, and then you hear like excitement panic on the call from Paris. That very strange combination of happy having accomplished the goal, but also, what now? Things are fucked.
Yeah.
And he disappears after this.
And they're like, shit, he could be literally anywhere. Like, the universe is the search radius for finding Tom Paris.
He could be in your tax documents folder right now, Harry Kim.
But just as they're starting to grapple with the ramifications of that, something comes out of subspace, and it is the race car bed.
Yeah. They don't milk this moment very long, do they?
No. Paris is unconscious when they get him to six bay.
Can you wake him?
Wake up, Lieutenant!
When Paris wakes up, he's kind of in a post-warp threshold refractory period. He's feeling good. He's kind of blissed out.
He was a being of pure energy for a minute.
There's that moment, though, like as time goes on, he's talking excitedly about all the places he had been, which are all the places.
Yeah.
And as he describes these moments, they start to fade away from him in a way that makes him very sad.
I mean, he was all the places, but also he kind of only lists places that we're familiar with, which is a little bit sus.
It's a little bit of episode misdirection, though, because this is the moment where I was like, well, this is going to be a story about Paris doing anything to get back to Warp 10 the way they want to get back to the island and Lost, you know?
Like chasing the Warp 10 dragon.
Yeah, so that's where my head was at in this moment, but that's not exactly how it goes. So in walks BLT, stoked about the success first, and secondarily happy that Paris is alive. And like and third on the list is, thanks for not banging up the shuttle. Yeah. Like, glad we got that one back.
Yeah, that's one of the cooler ones, and we didn't want to lose that.
Yeah. So the trouble is, like, after Paris went through this adventure, he's going to be on bed rest for the time being. So Kim's the next man up if they do more experiments is the idea.
Yeah, but first they need to get the logs and download the data in the shuttle. And when they start downloading it, they're like, wow, like, true to what he said. Like, this shuttle has navigation data from every square inch of this sector, which is kind of a lot of space.
It's over 5 billion gigaquads of information.
It's sort of more information on the quarters that the Delaney sisters live than you would expect, though. Like, there's a general sense of of the area around them in the quadrant, but then like a very specific amount of data about those two quarters.
It's every inch of the sector, but every millimeter of the Delaney sisters' quarters. It's like a much higher resolution just in that one little particular part. And as they're doing this, Traitor Guy is off in the corner, like literally like putting wax into his curly mustache.
Yeah, because what we're getting here is value.
Yeah, I'm sure that this will develop over episodes, but if I was Traitor Guy right now, I'd be like, wow, we may be able to go home. Like, this fucking rules. And maybe I was wrong about the captain in the last episode that I was in.
It is extremely weird that he has assumed mission failure here.
Yeah, and assumed that like the best path forward for him is to deal with the Kazon.
The Kazon, to my knowledge, are not trying to go back to the Alpha Quadrant. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, What is exactly his play there?
Doesn't seem to be their primary motivation as a species, but also, yeah, like, I don't know what his motivation is as a character. Like,
yeah.
it seems like it is mostly about fuck you, Captain Janeway, at this point.
Strange motivations.
Mm-hmm.
So in the mess hall, Neelix is pouring a Paris Delight, which the subtitle on the beans says a thick and ropey blend.
Thick and ropey because despite all the braggadocio, it doesn't actually get shot that often.
Right. And mid-conversation with BLT, Paris kind of blurfs for a second. And the two of them think it might just be some indigestion. It might just be an acid reflux thing with the Paris Delight.
Yeah.
I don't know. The symptoms come on pretty strong here.
Yeah.
And when Paris collapses, he looks like a man who has had fish for dinner.
Taurus to transporter room 2. Medical emergency.
He sure does. And they rush him to Six Bay, and it is determined that he is having an allergic reaction to the water in the coffee.
It's shocking.
Shocking. How could that be possible? He's never had an allergic reaction like that before.
I thought it was interesting that BLT called for an emergency transport and they couldn't get a lock on him. I thought that was an interesting tell about what may be happening to him too, right?
Like, yeah.
They said something about the reason for not getting a lock. I don't know. It seems consistent with someone who's going through some crazy biological changes, maybe.
Like, your head goes to like, oh, like maybe he's like phasing in and out of reality or something. Mm-hmm. And the doc is like, I mean, the doc gave him a clean bill of health when he got back. He's like, he's fine. He's just sleeping. There's nothing that was anomalous then. And what's anomalous now is that he's having an allergic reaction to something that would be very unusual to be allergic to. And then it seems like he can't breathe the kind of air that normal humans breathe. And they have to replace the air in the ICU with something else.
This is a great doctor episode. I like his quick thinking.
Yeah.
I like the idea of a force field lung that he's put into.
Yeah. Well, after losing a patient last episode, he's really got to like fight back into the good graces of the crew.
Right. We're running out of torpedoes here, yeah, guys.
I know we technically have one torpedo for every crew member if we need to shoot them into space.
The doc really cuts to the chase here. Paris is dying. And in order to try to save his life, he's going to need all of the intel from what happened to him on board the shuttle. So that is going to be running in the background for a little bit.
We do a cut to exterior of the ship and back into Six Bay to establish the passage of time. And Paris is getting worse and worse.
Paris has heard this, clearly. He's heard that he's dying.
And also establishing the passage of time is that Paris is starting to have, like, flaky skin on his face.
Solution, Neutrogena T-Gel. It works.
And is pretty sanguine about the fact that these are his final moments. He's mutating.
This is a really solid B-Dunks performance here. He's talking about his childhood and pizza and kissing Kes. Like it's sort of a mania happening here on screen.
Yeah.
And I found it really affecting. And like, look at B-Dunks here acting with all this shit on him.
It's a shit out the sides of my eye!
Increase the dosage to 85 rats per second.
I don't even want to be around anymore.
Big funeral.
Yeah.
He's affecting.
Talking about, like, his childhood and being a real a kid that was prone to crying and... Mm-hmm.
Crying and losing his virginity in the same room, probably at the same time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a lot of fluid coming out of him that day. Thick ropes of tears.
Yeah, that's the Tom Paris way. I mean, we only get a couple of examples of his major grief moments in his life before he flatlines, and it's RSVP Tom Paris.
He did.
Doc Holliday somberly removes the gas from the room and lowers the force field, and that's when Kes enters. But she should get a good night's sleep before they cut up the corpse, according to the doc. Like, the doc does not let 10 seconds go by before he's like, you know, you better rest your sawing hand for the morning.
Yeah. Listen, I know that you don't have as firm a grip on this ability, but he did want to be cremated and have his ashes scattered. So if you could work on getting up to a place where you could freshen him up, after the autopsy, that would be great.
You know, Hollow Disneyland is the only place you're allowed to spread cremains in the future. Don't even try it, the real one.
Yeah.
Kes kisses Paris on his very sweaty cheek in just a very generous act, I thought, given how gross Paris looks here.
Yeah, pretty gnarly. Later that night, the doc is like working with all the lights turned off in Six Bay. At his laptop, and hears spooky noises from the other room. Say, a real spooky scene where he goes and pulls the sheet off of Paris's face, and Paris is back.
I'm back, baby.
You're alive.
The doc is justifiably surprised by this.
Yeah.
Medically and personally.
He does that thing that I feel like is usually something in like a movie about radiation or poisoning, where he reaches up to his hair and pulls away a big chunk of hair.
I mean, Paris is plausibly scared and confused by this moment. And Doc gives it to him straight. Hey, man, you got two hearts.
Yeah, you're turning Klingon, maybe.
So, I mean, kind of good news, bad news, I guess.
Coffee black. Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
When we come back from commercial, we get another FaceTime between Traitor Guy and that same Kazon that he was talking to in the last episode.
Yeah, I don't know if we ever hear his name on screen, but it's Reddick.
Yeah. And I loved there's like some spycraft that goes totally unexplained, which is that he has to keep like rhythmically tapping these three buttons, and he has only a certain, number of seconds before security will detect the transmission. I thought that was fun. Like, I don't have any idea what it was, but it just made it feel like this is some really sneaky shit going on. And he is talking about selling this technology to the Kazon.
What are the Kazon going to do with this tech? Come on.
Yeah.
They don't even have water.
They don't have any good ideas of what to do with it.
Yeah.
Gonna use it to make bigger, more pine coney heads for themselves, probably.
Yeah. Unclear about where this is going to go at this moment in time. Reddick, again, not extremely helpful in a way that I admire.
This should prove my worth to you, Reddick.
We'll see.
Captain Janeway comes down to Six Bay to visit her pilot, and he's really starting to look like Goldmember here with his peely skin.
I really like this sequence and its reveal, because Janeway sees the doc first, and I feel like there's a lot of medical dramas that do this kind of trick, like tell me about my beloved friend or family member, and the doc's like, I should probably let you know before you go in there. It's just like 50 pounds of burger, and nothing can prepare you for what that's going to be like. Yeah. And like, we walk with Janeway into the room where Paris is, and like, we've learned that like organs are being added and removed to his body, like on a cellular level, and his brains are being rewired on the fly. And so you're getting the imagination picture of what he's going to look like.
Yeah.
And then she walks past Kes, and Kes has like resting disgusted face while she does work. I love Jennifer Leon's work here. And then when we like cross the threshold, we see Paris, and he looks like Conan O'Brien dipped in Vaseline and kettle cooked potato chips. He is gross, and his head is like throbbing.
Yeah.
In and out. Like, his skull looks like he's got soft skull, so it's like it's breathing on its own. It's nasty.
Yeah. She tells him there's only two things she hates in the galaxy: people who are intolerant of other cultures and the Dutch. He peels off some of this skin and saves it for later.
You do get Pizza the Hut vibes from Tom Paris here.
Yeah. It's a very creepy, weird performance. He's like very erratic and self-contradictory, and like gets angry at her.
We're all concerned about you, Tom. We're here to help you.
There's too much fucking shit on me. I can't breathe.
Lieutenant, you know that's not true.
I'm so hot!
Smashes himself against the force field at one point.
I know before in that earlier scene, I was like, well, why didn't B-Dunks like get more emotional earlier? But what's happening is he left himself more runway to get weirder and for there to be more mania involved. And I like that he left himself room to add the amps here, you know?
Yeah. He starts to like lump her in with the thing that he's been fighting his whole life of people telling him that he's great and he's doing a great job when he knows that he is like actually not equal to the challenges that are presented to him.
My dad told me that I could never get this gross. Well, how do you like this, Dad?
I took my tongue off.
Oh, it is so gnarly.
Like, second time in season two that I feel like Voyager has approached the apex of grossness for Star Trek.
I way spoke too soon about adding season two episodes to my Mount Grossmore. This is way on there. And this scene specifically.
Oh my God. It's so upsetting to watch. I mean, just the makeup is upsetting, but then when the tongue thing happens, it's like, wow. I looked away from the TV. I couldn't deal with it. It's really well done body horror. And I think that like the mania helps that, you know, like the, like there are moments where it really feels like Tom Paris and a man we sympathize with for his plight, and then other moments where he is terrifying. And I think if it was all terrifying and aggression, you wouldn't be as repulsed in a way.
The part that was the most upsetting to me wasn't the gelatinousness of the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even the color of the tongue. It was the cruel intentions amount of saliva that hung between the tongue and his mouth.
Yeah.
And I love how they pay this off later, too. Like, there's tongue continuity where Paris is talking without his tongue.
And yeah.
It's gross as hell.
Yeah. I love the little giggle when it comes out, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've got to save Paris. The doc comes up with a plan. He wants to irradiate him with a certain kind of protons that can only be gotten from the warp core. And what they want to do is bombard all of the like parts of his body that have mutated already with this type of radiation. And so only the original DNA will be left, and his body will have to rebuild using that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the blueprint that it would use, right? So that kind of makes sense.
When we see the chamber he's put in, none of the chamber covers his face. So I guess they're going to leave that alone. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do anything about the tongue.
Yeah. He's like almost looking the way Geordi did in the episode where he turned into an invisible man.
Oh, good call.
At this point.
He really looks like that.
Yeah.
Good thinking. It's funny how Paris goes back and forth, like his lucidity is really ping-ponging back and forth, like, and how, like, this is a scene that made me think about Picard in All Good Things. Like, people trusted Picard when he was talking that kind of crazy in a way that Paris doesn't command that kind of respect. Like, because in a certain context, you know, Paris is wanting to leave the ship for reasons. And I think if Picard were in this same circumstance and he wanted to leave the ship for reasons, he might be listened to for a moment in a way that Paris is not getting.
Yeah, he would. The people are more deferential.
Yeah.
In that context, we get to see the scene where Paris breaks out from the standpoint of the FaceTime camera.
I love this perspective.
We attended a funeral for a family member recently over Zoom, and it was like one of the worst Zoom things I've seen so far since the pandemic started, which was they opened a laptop at the back of a church, and then the officiant walked all the way to the like pulpit at the other end of the church to deliver the funeral.
God.
It was just like, this is the like nobody needs to see the audience. We need to hear what you're saying. Like, this is the worst possible positioning for this laptop.
And someone's not muted out there during the service, and it's just like,
I shit you not, Adam, there was a guy that had Fox News on full blast watching it on his television while he was also watching the funeral on Zoom and could not figure out how to mute his mic. Wouldn't turn off Fox News, couldn't figure out how to mute his mic.
That is not fair.
It was fucking insane.
I've got to get that platinum, get that low bed large.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe, another candle, slippers, a sweater, flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one, an Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What not? Are you planning a heist?
Gold. So the Doc and Kes watch as the gunfight goes down in engineering, and it becomes clear that that lizard man Tom Paris has broken out.
Lieutenant, what's happening?
This is one of those decisions that I think, when you and I talk about the constraints of independent film and video production, like, it's inspirational to say, you know, like the constraints of budget or whatever, it just forces you to be more creative.
Right.
But often, like, that's just like a fucking jack-off hand motion to that. You know what? I would, 10 out of 10 times, I would rather have more budget and time to do the things that I wanted to do. But this scene here is an example of a constraint creating a great creative decision, because I don't want to be in engineering seeing this happen. Yeah. I want to see the beams cross the screen, and I want to see Kes and the Doc watch in horror, guessing about what's happening and hearing a potential monster you know, nearest the most sensitive part of the ship. Like, yeah. This is great.
It's great. And then I love just the world building moment that happens next of Tuvok getting over a all ship broadcast.
Yeah.
Saying that they have a level 3 security alert. Like, I feel like we are always on the bridge or wherever the security alert is getting announced from.
Yeah.
We're never in the corridor or in six bay hearing that announcement. And I love that.
Yeah, it's a very lower decks perspective that I wish we got more often.
Yeah, so Janeway is alerted. She's on her way down to engineering and pulls a phaser out and gets the download from Chakotay. But she gets body checked into an elevator by Lizard Boy, and up on the bridge, he shot something crucial enough that they don't have sensors and they don't have a bunch of the things that they would use to solve a problem like this. So by the time he is in the race car class shuttle and out of the ship, they're unable to even grab him with a tractor beam.
I think one of the other comparisons to the Geordi LaForge episode where he turned into glow-in-the-dark LaForge,
yeah,
was that, I mean, they showed full body compositions of him,
right,
in that episode.
Yeah.
Almost to the detriment of the episode. And I think this episode does a good job of just keeping it at a cowboy type of shot with him. Like, they don't show his entire body in a way that could read as comical or weird.
Yeah.
And I think that was a good choice.
I do too. I think he kind of stays alien xenomorph in that way. And the fact that he's also changing, every third time we see him, makes it what he is scarier and weirder.
And they don't have to show his giant wet crank flopping around as he gallops around the ship.
Well, they had the budget to do some puppetry in this episode, and they considered it for that, but they took that in a different direction.
Yeah, they spent all the puppet money a couple episodes ago.
Well, they spent it in the last...
In the last act of this episode.
Yeah. So he takes Janeway into Transwarp. She wakes up in the shuttle, and they've already gone to Plaid.
I love the hopelessness of the chase. You know, the Voyager isn't fast enough to pursue.
Yeah.
And this baby's gone.
Gone, baby, gone. And we come back to Starship Voyager, and it's days later. Captain Chakotay has been making a lot of changes on the ship. We come back and everybody's in Maquis uniforms. They've even reprogrammed the doctor to be wearing a leather vest and a sash.
Can I do this?
They've changed course.
Yeah. The doc has a lot of face tats and a couple of tears to represent crew members he's lost.
That's the end of the episode. No.
What really happens is that they find the shuttle
on a wet class planet.
And we're already going to a bog planet, which is the worst kind of planets as far as planets go.
The doctor is like, you know that thing we tried that didn't work to fix him? It's going to work this time.
We just got to turn it up.
As long as you can find him, we can fix this situation.
Right.
And they beam down to the bogs of a jungle planet and find the captain and... had Paris have turned into really big axolotls, basically.
What is that word?
You don't know an axolotl?
No.
An axolotl is a weird kind of salamander native to Mexico.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Axolotl.
Ankylosaur.
I think it's an Aztec word.
I was not aware of that.
Axolotl used to be my screen name on AOL Instant Messenger.
There you go. That's how you know it. Yeah.
I worked in a biology lab when I was in high school, and they had axolotls there, and I thought that they were really neat.
These two axolotls are big as hell. They're two rolled-out sleeping bags. They're that big.
What we've come to learn is that they represent a evolutionary endpoint for humans. The going to Transwarp kicked the process of evolution into overdrive, and... The doctor explains that...
Yeah, but Ben, before we find that out, Chakotay shoots both of them, which I think is a great order of operations. We're sort of assuming that it's Paris and Janeway. There's the joke about you know, which one is which based on their genitals.
Yeah, we got to flip them over.
But this is like Chakotay just beams down and shoots.
Yeah. He's got to get them back to the ship. And but before they do, we get to see the offspring of these two salamanders.
What the fuck?
They come up out of a hole in the sand and then slither into the drink.
I don't know how I'm going to enter this into the log.
I thought Chakotay was going to shoot these things too.
And so three of these things get left on this planet, and they're like, "We'll just let them do what they're going to do." And we cut back up to Six Bay, where the captain and Paris have been restored to their human stage of evolution.
Is this the craziest elliptical edit Star Trek has ever dropped on us? I was so upset by this.
I love it.
We need to have a point to all this. And now is the time. This conversation is that.
Yeah, she doesn't know how she's going to explain all of this to Tom Mervins.
I never wanted to have children.
Yeah, he's very embarrassed that he's sired offspring with her. They kind of do some bits about, like, maybe it was you that kicked it to me, and maybe it was me that kicked it to you. We'll never know.
I mean, the way Paris puts it is, like, you know, sometimes you fuck around and get turned into a salamander, fuck your captain and have lizard babies with her, and find out that it was really all about having a healthier self-image in the end. Mm-hmm. Maybe not putting so much of your self-worth into your career.
Yeah. Paris, like, almost literally says, "See, I learned something today."
Woof.
It's a real schmaltzy button on this episode, Adam.
Given how wet and glistening so many things are in this episode, mm-hmm. the schmaltz at the end still surprised me. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't have, given all that, but it did. Did you like this episode?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullying, I don't like Fred, and I don't like you.
I like this episode. I like it a lot. It's fun. To me, this episode achieves fun first. I think its ending is weak, but also I think that Star Trek does best when we can expect a few episodes like this in a given season. Like, I want weird shit that is like, what? Like, that's an experience I really love having when I'm watching an episode of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Here is my honest experience of rewatching this episode for the show today, Adam. I rewatched the episode for the show, and then I, like, looked it up and discovered that it was an episode that, like, uniquely inspired fan outrage. I was shocked.
Oh.
I never experienced it like that. I mean, I think I watched this when it aired on television and thought it was mm-hmm. like a B-minus execution of an interesting and weird idea for an episode. But I never thought it was like a dog shit episode or like an offensive abuse of Star Trek canon or anything. It's just a fucking weird episode. Like, I read that like the showrunners like decanonized this one. It's considered
Whoa, really?
To, like, not have happened in Star Trek canon.
Can they even do that?
I don't know.
They can't do that.
I mean, you hope they can. I think it's called the Code of Honor rule.
Oh, right. Yeah, it should be possible, huh?
But I don't know. I kind of ride for this episode. I know it's not great, but I kind of ride for it, is my position on the matter. How about yourself, Adam?
I mean, you're very persuasive with your point of view here, and I really am inclined to agree. For this reason specifically, like, I really like when the show takes big swings and gets weird. What I didn't want was another episode where characters get space drunk and accidentally fuck. I feel like we've gotten 8 episodes that are basically that. Give me a new spin on that. And that is utterly what this was.
Yeah.
I laughed a ton in this episode just at the audacity of those big swings that it took.
Totally.
I like that this episode signaled toward a kind of Star Trek lore, the Warp 10 rule. I like that this episode spoke directly to that and fucked around and found out why we never talk about or experiment with Warp 10.
Yeah.
And why we probably never will again. Look, the difference between a bad episode, like on the chart of four squares, the difference between like the unenjoyable bad episode and the enjoyable bad episode is so extreme to me. I would rather watch an enjoyably bad episode over an unenjoyably good episode, even most of the time.
Yeah.
And Threshold is emblematic of that. It's greatest gen canon. I'll tell you that right now.
Hell yeah.
No one's uncanonizing Threshold from greatest gen lore. I'm happy I watched it. It's crazy as hell.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way season two is going to get more crazy than this. That's what I'm saying. Like, not a chance you could beat Threshold in weird as hell. I'll stake that claim right now.
Wow. Wow, Adam. Well, do you want to see if we have any weird as hell priority one messages in the inbox?
How fitting would that be?
That would be great.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a personal nature. It's from Julia, and it's to Robert. The message goes like this. Robert, you are a truly rad dude who's a great friend, husband, and soon to be father.
Wow.
I can't wait to raise the boy with you. And if this shout out is at or around April 1st, happy birthday.
Amazing.
Oh boy, Julia, going for the April 1st. Birthday date. Who knows when the birth date of Robert and Julia's child will be.
Yeah.
But wow. So Robert and Julia could be way on down the road of this thing.
Yeah. They could already be totally sick of being parents.
Yeah. Wow.
Or totally in love with being parents. Either one is possible.
It sure is.
It's one or the other, though. There's nobody that's got neutral feelings about that.
No.
Congratulations to both of you, and happy belated birthday, Robert.
Yeah, happy birthday, Robert. And happy birthday to your son.
Adam, our next Priority One message is from Lulu, and it's to Pluskina. And it goes like this. Well, buddy, we are finally here. The episode that defines Voyager. There are three salamander youths that will grow up alone in a cold world, never to be remembered by their parents. I wanted to give you a thing those poor amphibikids will never have. Love and birthday wishes. You are one of my best buds, and I hope that all of your birthdays are the very best.
I think Lulu is totally right here. Like, in the same way that that giant Spock is just out there somewhere. or like, the idea was to go back to the Genesis planet to check up on a torpedo they shot there. We've got to go back.
Yeah.
We got to go back to this planet and visit those kids.
We got to find out what's going on with the nubbin bugs. There's a lot of untied threads in Star Trek.
We got to grab those three salamanders. We got to imprison them in jars until we can find out what's happening, Ben.
Yeah. Well, if you would like to wish somebody a happy birthday or tell us what the defining episode of Voyager is, you can leave a Priority One message by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. We really appreciate it because it helps us continue to support the production of this program. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
One character we didn't talk about very much is the character that takes over this episode to me, and that's Doc Holliday.
Yeah.
He has a couple of line reads here that are hilarious to me. Like,
I'm glad you had a good time.
And
it's a miracle he's still alive.
Real laughs out of me this episode, to go along with the probably unintentional laughs that I got out of other parts of the ep. Yeah, Robert Picardo doing strong comedy work here. So I'm going to make the doc my drunk Shimoda.
Wow.
What about you?
Good call. I think I'm going to give it to Ensign Trader. whatever his name is, the guy that like sees that they have crossed the transwarp barrier and is like, I am still going to betray these guys to the local gangster aliens in this quadrant who have never been shown to be trustworthy. That's my play.
Jonas, right?
Yeah, Michael Jonas.
Yeah.
Just a real bonehead move by him, in my opinion.
It's a deal with the devil, Jonas.
Mm-hmm. And it's a devil you don't even know that well.
Gotta do better. Yeah. Yeah, you gotta be doing deals with devils you know, at least.
At the very minimum.
That's just good business.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Well, we gotta be dealing with the next episode of Star Trek Voyager, Ben, and for that we gotta figure out how.
Yeah.
We fuck around and find out how by going to the game of Butthole's World of Caretaker, where we are currently on square 19.
Adam, our next episode is season 2, episode 16, Meld, unable to come up with a logical motive for a shipboard murder. Tuvok performs a mind meld with the perpetrator that brings out Tuvok's killer instinct. Just a terribly written capsule. It uses Tuvok twice in the same clause.
This sounds a lot like the Dax episode, right?
Where
Dax gets to know the murderer inside.
Yeah, the suppressed murderer within her.
Yeah, it sounds like that kind of story. I wonder if it'll be like it.
Talk about your all-time mind meld backfires.
I know. Can't do that.
Well, Adam, why don't you warm up that bone and throw it here on the board and tell us how we're going to be doing this next episode.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right, Ben, I've got the die in my hand. We're like really in danger from a lot of different squares here. We've got His Eyes Uncovered, the Temerian-style metaphors episode, two squares ahead, and then we got a banger a few squares after that. That banger.
Yeah, we hit that banger last time.
Is what we hit last time, so we'll see what happens this time around. Give this bone a roll. And what I did is I rolled a 5, hit the banger, and we're right back on the very same square.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Wow, this has never happened in the history of the game of buttholes.
So I got us nowhere. That's my job on the show, kind of always.
Much like Tom Paris in Six Bay, you just ran at the force field full speed and bonked your face into it.
Yeah, I bonked us into it, Ben.
Yeah. Wow.
We're both inside that runabout.
That's true. I often forget that I'm trapped in there with you.
Yeah, but you know what, Ben? We're not alone in here either. We have the Friends of DeSoto to support us, and so many of them make the show possible by going to MaximumFun.org/join.
Yeah, we're not trapped in the runabout with the Friends of DeSoto.
They're trapped in here with us!
We really appreciate everyone that supports the show or recommends it to a friend or leaves a nice review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use.
Yeah.
We really, really love all of that stuff, and it helps us grow the show, and that is great for everyone.
Maybe you're not a friend of DeSoto and want to find out how you can become one. Well, you can meet Friends of DeSoto just about anywhere on the internet, on all of the places people do social media.
That's true.
We've got the Discord group at drunkshimoda.com. We've got so many Facebook groups out there. You can talk to a friend of DeSoto on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. You can talk to the card daddy Bill Tilly on Twitter. He's our social media expert, and he's at Bill Tilly 1973. Did I call him a social media expert? I would say no one's a social media expert, but he's our social media manager.
Yeah.
And he makes being a friend of DeSoto so much fun on the internet.
Yeah. I think next week or in the next week or two, we're going to do a big mail call episode. And if you've got something you'd like to send in, get in touch through the Greatest Trek Twitter account. Send a DM to that. And if Bill Tilly thinks the thing you are going to send in sounds like it passes muster, he'll give you our P.O. box.
The Greatest Gen Twitter account officially is at Greatest Trek, and that's the same handle used for the Greatest Gen Instagram account.
And our Twitch account, which we are on occasionally, having fun and goofing around.
Yeah.
We got to thank Adam Ragusea, who made the Janeway song, the theme song of The Greatest Generation Voyager, and Dark Materia, who made the Picard song, the original theme song of The Greatest Generation, which you hear potted down below our voices right now. Thanks to both of you. Catch up with Adam Ragusea on his YouTube channel, where he will teach you how to cook.
Yeah, he cooks with music for us.
Mm.
He cooks with food for the internet.
And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager, where Adam and I try and fail to have a killer instinct. It's just not really in us.
Yeah, passive instinct.
Yeah.
That's my biographical movie title right there.
Yeah, fuck around and find nothing out.
Make it so.
The last episode of Voyager, like they cruise back into Sector 001. Like the fanfare plays, they've used breaking the warp barrier to do it.
Yeah.
So they can go anywhere instantaneously. They're like, "You made it home. It's great. You want to go back and visit your kids, which you can do instantaneously." No, we're good.
Yeah,
we're good.
I'm sure they're fine.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.